Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. And joining me is the editor of USA Today's Rocket Squire and the host of the Loggerline podcast, Ben DuBose, an old friend of the show. And Ben, we scheduled this with the hope that it was going to be a fun preview to a pseudo playoff game with Golden State, but the Rockets season pretty much died Tuesday night.
It feels like it, because at this point, down three to the Warriors with seven to play and without the tiebreaker, you would have to outplay them by four games over the final seven. That's a lot to ask, even if you do take care of business at home, which is far from a guarantee, because the Warriors, I looked it up, are 22-15 on the road this season. Even if you win that game Thursday, you still got to outplay the Warriors from that point forward by three over the final six, and that is a lot to ask. The one silver lining that I can take out of it, it's not like the Rockets choked underneath the pressure by any means. It's more that the Warriors went out and took that final spot than it is the Rockets lost it. Because I said on my pod last week, if they were to go 2-2 against this upcoming schedule, and at the time they'd won nine in a row, and the four games coming up were OKC, Utah, Dallas, and Minnesota, three of the four on the road, I said if they go 2-2, and in that same week, the Warriors had a really difficult five-game stretch, four on the road, back-to-back in Florida against the Heat and the Magic, and then the same Dallas team that was in Houston on Sunday night went to San Francisco on Tuesday night. I thought if the Rockets went 2-2, the Warriors would at least have a couple of losses in there to where you would stay flat, you'd stay a game back, and then if you take that game on Thursday, you're tied. Now, tied without the tiebreaker, but still, and the point is you're in it going into the home stretch of the season, the final week to 10 days. And unfortunately, the Warriors went 5-0 against their what looked like a difficult stretch, and at this point have made it all but impossible for the Rockets. Not going to say fully impossible, because I thought they were done when they were nine games under 500 going into March, and their play-in odds were like 1 or 2% according to the models. So I won't ever say done until they're mathematically eliminated at this point. But yeah, it certainly feels like with the Warriors picking off every game in that five-game stretch that it was a window where the Rockets needed some help. The Rockets just do not have the talent buffer to win 15, 20 games in a row. You're going to run into some games where, you know, Sunday against the Mavs, Dallas was just shooting the lights out from beyond the three-point arc, not just Luka, but on the rare occasions they did trap and double, guys outside of Luka shot 50% on high volume. And then the game in Minnesota, I know we'll get into it, but the Rockets until the last 3 minutes of the game, and by that point it was largely too little too late, could not buy a three themselves. Dylan Brooks, Fred VanVleet, maybe your veterans are a little worn down by how hard they've had to push in this recent stretch. But the point is, you're going to run into games where either you don't shoot well or your opponent shoots the lights out. That's why it's tough to sustain really long winning streaks unless your talent is just overwhelming. And the Rockets certainly are not there yet, especially without Alper and Şengün. So the Rockets needed some help. The window for help was last week. The Warriors had that tough back-to-back in Florida. The Lakers without LeBron were in Milwaukee. And when all of those results went against the Rockets, it just sort of felt like to me that the Rockets were living on borrowed time, because at some point there was going to be a game where the shot luck did not go Houston's way. That's sort of what happened against the Mavs and Timberwolves this week. And now you're going into a spot where, again, I've sort of been burned already. I made the case around the All-Star break that the Rockets were done on my podcast, so I'm not going to go quite that far again, but I will agree with you that it's highly, highly unlikely at this point. And so it feels like that game against the Warriors does not have quite the same buzz that we thought it would a week ago.
Yeah, you just can't keep a winning streak going unless you got Mike Harris into the starting lineup. You got to put him in there. It's an old school reference for you Rockets fans.
Steve Novak.
Yeah, Steve Novak too. Hey, given what you've seen from Jalen the last few weeks, is this enough to offer him the max extension this summer? And I want your take, Ben's take, and then how you think the Rockets might feel about it.
And I actually think these are one and the same. My answer is no. I just don't think with the current RFA system, which is so tilted towards the teams, RFA meaning restricted free agency, that it's worth it for the Rockets to do a deal this summer unless Jalen gives you a below max. Because the way it works out, he's going to be on your books in restricted free agency in 2025 with a cap hold of $31 million that's tied to his draft slot in 2021. And so unless Jalen is giving something back to the Rockets, i.e. taking a deal that lowers that cap hold figure, then I don't see why the Rockets would take the risk. Because if you wait, you get a lot more certainty. At that point, if you wait to max him until 2025, you get another season's worth of data. And we're not trying to guess, okay, is this last 12 to 15 games, however long it's been, when Jalen has been brilliant, is this for real? Is this when he has 100% figured it out and this is the player he's going to be moving forward? I am hopeful he's figured it out. However, if it was my money, I would rather wait to be sure, because there have been flashes in the past from Jalen that have eventually led to a regression. And while I don't think that's going to happen this time, I'm pretty encouraged by not just the points he's putting in, but the way he's getting those points. I think he's reading the game better. I think he's defending at a higher level. I just don't see the point to giving him a max now when you can wait a year, feel more secure that, yes, this is the Jalen Green that he's going to be permanently in the NBA, or at least during his prime athletic years. And so I just don't see the need to rush into it unless he gives you a sub-max deal. And I think that's the way the Rockets are going to look at this too, because the RFA system is tilted towards the teams. And even if it hurts Jalen's feelings a little bit, Okay, well, RFA gives you the right to match any outside offer. And let's be honest, most cases these days, players and agents are getting more savvy. It's nothing personal. It's just business. And so I think Jalen would respect it. I think Alper and Şengün would as well, that it's in the Rockets' best interest to wait until 2025. It gives them more options unless those guys are giving them something back this summer. That's what it comes down to me. You got to give something back.
It's no different from Şengün for you, or is it?
No, it's even less likely for Şengün, I think, simply because his cap hold at $16 million, which is, again, correlated with his draft slot. To me, it's even less likely that Şengün gets an extension this summer, simply because that $16 million figure is probably way less than what he's actually going to get on his next contract. So you would be dramatically reducing your financial flexibility if you gave Şengün, forget a max deal, even if he was somehow willing to take like a $25 million a year deal, which is a decent bit below his max. And I don't know why he would do that at this point.
So just to be clear for people that might not know this, you're saying, you know, this is something that the max would not kick in till a year from now.
Right.
And that's the difference, you think?
Yeah. Well, let's peel back the curtain a little bit on this. So Fred VanVleet has a team option on the third year of his contract. That's a massive deal in the mid 40s. Millions of dollars per year. And so the second year of his contract is this coming season. So in theory, if the Rockets want to go a different direction from Fred, or maybe some of the young guys aren't panning out, they could have a lot of flexibility financially a year from now. So it's called cap holds, but basically what a cap hold is, it's a figure that's on your books that gives you the right to match any outside offer and retain those players. For Jalen Green, it's $31 million. For Alper and Şengün, it's $16 million. And that's what their figures will be on July 1st, 2025, which is the start of 2025 free agency. As long as Fred VanVleet is on his current contract, you have the option, should you want to go a different direction, to potentially create a lot of cap space in 2025. If you give Jalen or Şengün a new deal this summer, then that cap figure on July 1st, 2025 would go from what is currently $31 million for Jalen and $16 for Şengün to the starting salary of whatever it is you give them. The odds are it would certainly be more than that for Şengün and probably more than that for Jalen. So that's why for me, it doesn't really make sense for the Rockets to do a deal this summer unless one of those players is willing to give something back. And I guess the Rockets might be willing to take a little bit less cap room in 2025 if the deal is friendly enough. So, but the point is, if those guys are just going to go in and say, look, we think we're max players, we're on the right trajectory, and they have every incentive to say that. I mean, they've had relatively encouraging years. Then the Rockets can say, you know what, you're probably going to get the max, but it benefits us financially to wait. If they want to get a deal done now, then I think the Rockets are going to take the position that, look, we're open to giving you a deal in 2024, but we need to get something out of this too. So my bet is that neither deal gets done, because I just don't see why either of those two would give the Rockets a sweetheart deal. I hope they do. It would be great if that's the case. I think Jalen's a little bit more likely, because I think Jalen, with his uneven play until the last couple of months, maybe there's a case that he takes a little bit less than $31 million. And so because of that, the Rockets get a little bit more financial wiggle room. But my suspicion is that with the praise both of these guys are going to get going into the offseason, they opt to bet on themselves and their ability to get a max deal. And I just think if the Rockets are going to give a max deal, it makes more sense to do it in 2025 than 2024.
Yeah, a lot of people just might not understand the whole cap hold situation and all that. So I'm glad you explained that. Dylan Brooks had a hot start to the season, Ben, but since his oblique injury, he shot 31.9% from three. His defense, it's dropped off too, in my opinion. I think most Rockets followers' opinions. Do you believe that injury lingered at all and has caused this issue?
Yeah, it's hard not to wonder. I did the numbers on my timeline the other night. Before the oblique injury, he was shooting nearly 41% from three. He was defending at a high level. Since the oblique injury, he's shooting below 32% from three. And by the eye test, it looks like the defense has slipped as well. And if you look at the plus minus, he was a positive player before the oblique injury. Since, he's been a negative, and that's even when you include this recent stretch where they went 13-2 in March and won 11 straight games. So yeah, he's a big question for me, and he's someone, it would not shock me if the Rockets explored deals with him this summer, because, you know, there's been a lot of chatter lately about, well, the Rockets will look to take a big swing in the trade market. You always hear that, you know, the Rockets are always big game hunting, but it actually is sort of tricky because they don't have a lot of salary figure beyond lower tier guys. Like, you can point to those year-to-year deals for guys like Jock Landale and Jeff Green, but we're talking $8-9 million a year. In terms of, let's say hypothetically, a true star shakes loose that makes $40 or $50 million a year, which is the max in the NBA these days, I don't think the Rockets want to include Fred VanVleet in such a proposal, Now, again, he would be an expiring salary figure, but I just think Fred is too important to the formula. If you're going to bring in a big name player that's ready to win now, well, I think you want to keep Fred because he helps you win now. He helps the spacing, he helps the leadership. He's so important. And so if Fred is not in the proposal, really the only guy that makes a sizable enough salary is Dylan at about $21, $22 million a year to make the math work, to send out enough salary to make that type of deal work. Just financially, it makes sense for the Rockets to explore moving Dylan simply because he's the one guy that has a salary of substance that I don't think is essential to your longer-term formula. And I do have some questions about the long-term fit. I mean, I hope some of the downturn is related to the oblique. It is a dividing line in the season, about 41% before, 32% after from three. You mentioned the defensive slippage. But also, the Rockets just have so many built-in replacements that can fill his role. We've seen Amen Thompson flourish as a wing defender. They should have Tari Eason back healthy next year. I know Amen is sort of playing as a quasi-center now due to the Şengün injury, but obviously Şengün is going to be back next year. So that throws Amen into more of the wing mix. I don't think they want to make Amen a point guard just yet. I think it's going to be Fred VanVleet until Amen develops a little bit more.
Yeah,
with
his handle. You're kind of jumping my next question, and I'll just flat out tell you. I mean, I asked that because he was signed for his defensive culture, but the Rockets arguably have two options in Amen and Tari, or better defensively, better rebounders who are the future. Udoka's about earning a spot and nothing being guaranteed, but you could say the same thing about Dylan earning a spot. And should Dylan be the starter next year?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a fair question. And my guess is that he's not. And it could be because Dylan isn't here, but it could also be that Amen just beats him out. I know internally the Rockets are incredibly high on Amen Thompson. The data points that they have in terms of his defensive impact are off the charts. Yet I don't think he's ready to be a point guard yet. The handle is still a work in progress. And Fred is so important in other areas. So if it's not there, where are they going to get Amen into the starting lineup? I think they want to start him, but it's just, who do you take out? I don't think they want to go permanently with Jabari at the five yet. And of course, that would mean, you know, opening up the whole can of worms with, well, do they move Şengün based on this recent hot stretch? I think that's premature. That's a whole different discussion. As things stand, I'm assuming that they're going to bring Şengün back. He's had a relatively encouraging season on the whole, and they'll proceed with the Jabari-Şengün front court the way they have for most of this season. And so if you believe that those two guys are set, if you believe that Fred and Jalen are in good shape, which I do, then Dylan's the only guy with a question mark next to him in that starting lineup. And of course, you can make the case for Tari as well, but I just think the Rockets see so much upside to Amen. And also Tari is so plug and play. He strikes me as an ideal six man because of not just his defense, but the shooting. You can use him in so many roles. He's sort of a Swiss Army knife. So you can put him at a lot of different spots, filling guys as they come off the bench. Yeah, I would think that Dylan's in jeopardy of losing his job, even if he stays. Now, it's not a given because if he comes off the bench, then all of a sudden, is that contract perceived negatively around the NBA? I don't know that it is, but his production has fallen enough to where, you know, earlier this year, I would have said Dylan is clearly a positive asset at his production on that contract. Now, I'm not going to say it's a negative, but it's not great. The other thing I will say about Dylan, he could also be a victim of how quickly the Rockets have come along. I do think Dylan has a lot of intangible value in terms of, like, he's that type of vet that commands attention. You had the quote that they play before every home game that he gave on media day. It's not going to be a walk in the park anymore when you play in Houston. You see the little things he does, like stepping to DeMar DeRozan a couple of weeks ago after he took that cheap shot against Jalen Green. That stuff is really important when you're trying to get off the ground, like the Rockets were before this year, trying to turn from a 22-60 team into what may end up being a 42-40 team this year, like a legit 20-win improvement from being one of the worst teams in the league to actually a winning team. However, when you were trying to go from 42-40 to, you know, 45-50 wins in a position that might actually get you into the playoffs, then it's not just about that sort of hard-nosed toughness, that presence that I think they really wanted Dylan to have around those young guys they're trying to develop. Next year, it becomes more strategic. Like, you've got to maximize every minute on the court. And Dylan just does some things. You know, it's not just that the jump shot has fallen off. It's just the careless turnovers from time to time, the ill-advised decisions, the lapses, the technical fouls he picks up, which can get him in trouble. Obviously, you've noted a few times he's close to reaching the max and getting on automatic suspension. It gives up free throws during games. The point is,
it's low IQ stuff. I mean, that's the stuff that bothers me. And for a young team, I mean, I know the stuff that he brings, but also, you know, the low IQ stuff is the stuff that you kind of want to get rid of. And, you know, for a young team, I'm just like, let's get rid of as much low IQ stuff and have much higher IQ out there, because that's how this team really needs to improve.
Well, I would say for a young team that has a chance of winning, I think going into this year, he was important from a culture perspective, even with those warts, if you will, just because that intangible value, the edge he plays with and takes with him, not just to the game, to the practice court, those kind of intangibles were really important. But when you transition to actually wanting to win at a high level, then those warts become a little more concerning. Now, it's not to the point that I consider him a negative asset. Like, I still think as long as he makes the threes at a respectable clip, which he has not the last couple of months, but I hope that's the oblique. If he can shoot 35% or better on threes, then I think he's still a net positive in terms of his impact. However, with the way this team is currently constructed and the reality that you have guys like Amin Thompson, like Tari Eason, like Cam Whitmore, that can fill those same minutes, higher upside guys, and in the case of Amin and Tari, guys that can also defend at a high level, then it sort of feels like Dylan might not have a role here, or that you might not need his skills as much as you thought you did a year ago. And then you combine that with the fact that his salary is really one of your only tradable salaries of substance, you start to see how it could make sense for the Rockets to move him this offseason. It's not so much that I'm saying they should, because there is some value even with those warts, assuming he can get the shot back. And even, you know, we should note that the NBA season's very long. Like, there is some statistical noise. He is still above 35% from three on high volume. So it's not like for the season as a whole, it's dreadful. And I think that's what will retain some positive trade value. It's just, yeah, when you combine the warts with the other guys that can play those same minutes, then yeah, I'm with you in that. I don't think it's a guarantee he starts in the fall. Although at that point, you would have to balance his trade value a little bit. I don't see how you couldn't. And then you also have to consider whether he's here at all, because he could be one of your most tradable guys this offseason from a financial perspective.
So you sort of led me right into this, because I think if you asked any Rockets follower, they would say Amin and Tari are two of the five best Rockets players. Mm-hmm. And if you want the five best Rockets players out on the floor, those guys should be out there. And I've been asking all my recent guests, who's your five? And it sounds like you might lead towards Amin in the lineup over Dylan with Jabari and Şengün, barring a major trade. Is that your starting five in November if you were the coach, I guess?
That's tough. I don't think that's your five best players. I think Tari is better than Jabari right now.
That's what
However,
I think.
Yeah. I just think that there are some politics that go with making a change of that substance. And well, it's not all politics. I mean, that's part of it, but it's also,
I mean, what's the politics? I mean, the politics are that, you know, Jabari was taken high in the draft, but my contention would be, you know, Udoka has been about guys earning their spot, and he doesn't care who you are or what you did or whatever. And Tari is just a better player. And frankly, and Ben, you know this, they're very high on Tari. You can speak to that. And the analytics love Tari and they love Amin.
They do. However, I would also point to Jalen Green as a cautionary tale, because there were a lot of people, including myself, I was open at the All-Star break to benching Jalen for Amin Thompson or Cam Whitmore. Ultimately, I just didn't think the juice was worth the squeeze. And since then, Jalen has really taken off. And it's not just about, you know, it's a complicated question to answer, because it's not just about how the player feels. That's part of it. But it's also about the consistency of role. And I think, you know, they're trying to get Jabari into a spot with the starters to where he's playing off ball a lot more. They believe that three-point shot can eventually get into, you know, the upper 30s, near 40%. The roles that Tari and Jabari have sort of played to this point in their career, Jabari can sort of get those open looks off of the attention and the drives that guys like Jalen and Fred and, well, Şengün's not a driving threat, but he obviously can command double teams. And so it helps him with a certain simplicity of role. That's what I keep coming back to, as opposed to.
I guess this is where you and I differ. What I see when Jabari, I see him having a lot of difficulty playing the role player as a guy that was the main guy at Auburn, taking all the shots. And he just hasn't got there yet as far as, hey, you're only going to get to shoot when you're open and there's a three-point shot, because we have Şengün and Jalen, and they're going to be the guys that are the primary part of the offense. And my belief is Jabari would be helped more than anybody by going to the bench and maybe getting some more shots. It doesn't mean he can't work his way back into the rotation. There's nothing permanent, but it just makes sense to me that to utilize the most of Jabari and get him shooting the ball more, it would help him to be away from Şengün and Jalen a little bit.
Yeah, I disagree with you on that, because if you go back to Jabari's days at Auburn, he actually wasn't the lead guy. There were a lot of people that criticized, I'm blanking on the names right now, but the Auburn guards the year that Jabari was there.
Yeah, but he was the star of the team.
Star of the team, but I'm saying if you looked at the way they played offensively, he was not a crazy high usage guy. And a lot of people blamed it on the guards. Some of it was just, it's not Jabari's playing style. He doesn't have the handle. There's a lot of work in progress. He didn't have the strength, and that's something he's still working on to get his shot off in a lot of matchups. And so he needs other guys to create the advantages for him.
He needs more strength maybe defensively sometimes, but offensively, the problem with Jabari is he's just not making shots. He's wide open and he's missing way too many wide open shots. And even if you're on him a little bit, there's nobody that's going to block that shot. Hardly anybody in the league can get up there and block the shot. He holds it high. He's 6'11". I mean, he's got a high release. These are shots that, you know, if he was the shooter that we thought he was, which he just hasn't been so far, he improved a little bit this year, but still you need him at 40. The guy that you drafted, for him to be as good as a top three pick, he needs to be a 40% shooter. Bottom line.
I would agree with that in the long run. Now, I will disagree with you that it's not a factor on offense, because you do see guys knock him off his spots. You can get him off balance. And I think when you affect his base, because he's not able to sort of hold his position.
The few shots he gets in the post, though, that's it. Just for the few shots that he gets in the post. Most of his shots are from the 3-point line, or him pulling up for, you know, a jump shot or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he does, to your point, he certainly needs to shoot better. That's true. And I think he's more aware of that than anyone. And I guess if you want to make the sixth man argument, then even if it's not his strength, then maybe he's better suited if he's going up against backups because those guys aren't as good. I mean, you can make that argument for sure. But I just think that especially after the way Jalen figured it out, it's not that consistency of role is going to be the only factor, but there's going to need to be a pretty big advantage in training camp. It's not that I think it couldn't happen. It could, but I just think that the way that it's happened to this point in their careers, Tari makes more sense as a bench guy because it's so easy for Tari to sort of create points out of nothing. The steals, the putbacks, the moving without the ball, you need someone that's able to sort of start themselves in an offensive sense off that bench because oftentimes you're not playing with a creator, a playmaker to the extent of Alperen Sengun or Jalen Green or even Fred VanVleet to guide you. So I think Tari's ability to sort of be a self-starter and get some points out of nothing, that's why they've liked him in those bench units. And with Jabari on paper, they think that the 3-point shot should come along and that would make him more of a complementary fit alongside the high usage guys like Sengun and Green. However, I will say to your point, if the split is large enough, I do think, especially next year where they're going to have expectations to not just get in the play-in tournament, but next year they're going to try to make the playoffs. Like, I don't know if they're going to be in full-blown, like, try to win a title mode, but definitely they're going to try and have meaningful games into hopefully May. Like, they believe they can do that internally, that maybe they don't take the leap that OKC did this year, but that they can at least go from low 40s to high 40s. And so if that's your approach and it's not just getting off the ground, yeah, you've got to maximize advantages. And if Tari is clearly better than Jabari in training camp, then yeah, unlike this year, where I think there were still some things given based on draft slot, based on long-term, next year, if Tari is clearly better, then yeah, like I will concede that it's possible. I just think that if it's close, then I think they'll sort of defer to the way things are just for the same reasons they stuck with Jalen. Before they do a change of that magnitude, give the guy every chance to succeed. And the most likely route for him to succeed is in the role that he's been sort of getting accustomed to the last couple of years.
Yeah, if the Tari and Jabari that we saw this year come back next year, even if Jabari's starting, Tari's going to be finishing the games.
So yeah, and that's the thing too. I mean, who starts doesn't mean who closes. And that's a different discussion altogether. Yeah.
The Rockets have this Brooklyn first round pick. It's a sketchy draft class that draftniks are saying looks like a bunch of role players. I'd be shocked if the Rockets traded any of their core six this offseason, all of whom should be rotational players next year. You add Jalen, Dylan, and Steven Adams, if we assume all those guys are back, and you've got 9 rotational guys. So that brings me to this. What's more likely? The Rockets draft somebody with the Brooklyn pick, or they deal it for a veteran rotational role player?
I'm going to say it's more likely that if those are the two options that they draft, simply because I don't see them dealing the pick for a veteran role player, because I just don't know where the spot is that they could clearly upgrade. When you look at what they've got for next season with Tari and Sengun coming back and Steven Adams coming into the rotation. So let's assume for the sake of argument that the starting lineup stays as it has this season. Not saying it will, not saying it should, but just for the sake of this discussion, Fred, Jalen, Dylan, Jabari, and Sengun. Then off the bench, you've got Amen and Cam, you've got Steven Adams, and you've got Tari Eason. That's a 9-man deep rotation already. So I don't see them dealing that pick for just a run-of-the-mill rotation guy when they don't even have, assuming health, a role for that guy to fill. I mean, I guess, you know, you could re-sign Earn Holiday or try to find some other quote-unquote backup point guard that can spell Fred from time to time and give you another ball handler.
Yeah, if you're asking me what I would, my main person I would sign this offseason, I would frankly keep it mostly as is, unless, like you said, you can maybe upgrade the salary spot with Dylan, get somebody maybe a little bit better, potentially trade some of the Brooklyn picks with Dylan and improve that position. But, assuming everything else is the same and you can't find that upgrade, you know, I'm of the belief that the thing that they need more than anything is somebody like a Tyus Jones that could help back up Fred, because the one position with everything that you've got coming back next year that you wish you could upgrade is, you know, the Fred's backup position. And I know Jalen's going to be doing a lot of the ball handling and doing that sort of stuff, but, you know, you just don't have the guys that you've got. And, you know, Earn Holiday, he's been helpful this year, and I would love to keep him at the back of the bench, but I would prefer somebody like a Tyus Jones to run the team.
And that makes sense, but I just think you can get a guy like Tyus Jones in free agency. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, go ahead. Yeah, he'd be my guy I would go after.
Yeah, and so you don't need to trade for that. So I would be inclined in that scenario, because it's not like there's a clear rotation need, just to keep the pick. Now, I think they will, as you mentioned, look at trade proposals, but it would be for bigger swings. If you could package that 2024 pick with other Brooklyn assets, with the Dylan Brooks salary, if something big comes along, then you could do a roster consolidation move or asset consolidation, whatever you want to call it. And that could make the pick more valuable to them. I do think they'll look at those in June. But if it's just trade the pick for a role player or keep the pick, it wouldn't surprise me if they keep the pick. Because here's the thing about this draft, Robert. So it's a weak draft overall, but it actually does have a number of like high-end role player types. The reason it's considered weak is because there's not a lot of upside. There's not a lot of guys that scream all-star in terms of the talent base. The Rockets don't need that. They need just complementary pieces, especially if, and maybe the big trade doesn't come along now. Maybe the big trade comes along during the season. Maybe it's a year from now. Maybe it's 2 years from now. But at some point, if the Rockets make this sort of consolidation move for a star the way that, you know, Tim McMahon and a few people have hinted at, really not just the last few days, for months, people are just talking about the Rockets more because they've had this recent winning streak, then if you make that kind of move, what do you need? You need to be able to fill rotation spots efficiently and cheaply internally. And so if you have to, you know, package a few guys and you have a Dalton Connect who you can trust to make shots and is on a friendly contract and can step in immediately, like, again, the draft is considered not good because there's a lot of, you know, non-star players. They're older, so they don't have the upside. But in the case of the Rockets and the way they're configured, that could actually be what they need. Guys who are just super plug and play on cheap rookie deals for 4 years. Even if there's not a whole next season as currently constructed, making that pick can still benefit them because it gives them more options down the line with what they can do. And if there is a big trade that comes down the line, then you can sort of plug and play whoever you draft into that slot. So I would say that the Rockets will definitely look for trades with that pick if there's something bigger comes along. But if it's just save, if it's make the pick or swap it for a role player, I think you make the pick because I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze when it comes to, you know, trading for a role player when you factor in they've already got nine rotation guys that are needing minutes.
Yeah, and I just want to throw this into the equation, Ben. And I feel like this whole idea, everybody has always talked for the last few years about the Rockets going out and getting a bigger fish. And Tim McMahon, he's guessing, or I think he's talking about old scenarios with the Rockets, not looking at what's going on with Jalen and Şengün right now. And actually what's going on with the league right now, because those big fish don't look like they're going to come, you know, out there. Number one, right. Number two, if I'm the Rockets looking at what they've got, you know, and they still need more data. They still need you still need to see what they've got next year. But if we're kind of guessing what we're seeing right now, Ben, I believe that unless you're getting a young star that you can put with these guys, and those guys just aren't out there. Typically, they don't get traded. There's not a guy that looks like that's that obvious. You were hoping it was Luka, but they did a great job at the trade deadline, and that's where they're at. You know, I'm not seeing Giannis come loose anytime soon, somebody like that. So unless it's a guy that's a younger, not a 30-something, and there's all these 30-something guys out there, that's not the way you want to build. And going forward with the new CBA, as you know, it's very punitive when you get over a certain thing. So building the old three-star model isn't going to work as well. The new model, I think, is going to be one or two, you know, preferably two stars with as many really good role players, because I think depth right now in a loaded league with a lot of talent and a lot of teams with a lot of depth matters more.
Yeah, and a lot of it's going to depend on when we talk about, you know, big swing trades, people throw anyone that's on the fringe of all-star consideration into the same bucket, when in reality, that's not the case. And I think that's where some of the nuance gets lost. Like, I don't think it's all outdated intel. I do think that even now, if a guy that was truly top 10, top 15 in the league came on the market, even if they were in their 30s, the Rockets would be interested because they do not know for sure that any of their core six are going to get to that level. So if that guy came along, but the bar is a lot higher than people think. I'll use one example. People have thrown out the name Trae Young, not just for the Rockets, but in a general NBA sense, as the name of a star that might hit the market. I don't think Trae Young is at the tier, and he is younger, but I just don't think he's at the tier where it's worth it to consolidate that many assets. He's a good player, but he's more, you know, top 20 to 30 than he is top 10. And I think that's the line that I would draw, and I think it's what the Rockets are drawing. They don't want to make a trade for a guy who's got a max contract, but he's really a top 20, top 30 player, because the odds are you can develop someone of that stature just from the core six, just from what you have. The question is if someone that's actually of a higher tier that can be not just an all-star, but an all-NBA player, someone that's top 10 potentially in the entire league, at his best, maybe even an MVP candidate, would someone of that stature be available? And that's where I go back to what you said earlier. I just don't know who that would be. Now, I'll keep my eyes peeled. I mean, maybe if somebody goes out sad in the playoffs, you never know. It is the player empowerment era. But that's what I think is getting lost. You know, I hate that people are giving McMahon a hard time because McMahon is plugged in. McMahon does his homework. He talks to the right people in the Rockets organization. He's not wrong with what he's saying. It's just people are then taking what he says and assuming anyone that's even on the fringe of all-star consideration, like even a Mikal Bridges, would then meet that criteria. And that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that the Rockets would be interested in that type of deal if a legit, you know, top 10-ish player in the league were available. I think that's true. I think that's still true today. It's just I have no idea who that player would be. I personally don't see that hitting the market this offseason. And so because of that, I agree with you. It's more likely if they just stay the course and run it back next season. Now, the one bit of cold water I would throw on that, this may not be as linear a progression as a lot of Rockets fans want because of that lack of movement. Look, the West is insanely strong this year. To take it full circle to where we started, look, Golden State is 41-34. That is insanely strong for a 10 seed. Oklahoma City got in the play-in tournament last year at 40-42. The Rockets could be 42-40 this year and not even close. And then you look at next year, the four teams behind them, Memphis is at least going to get competitive when they get Jaw back to pair with Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. San Antonio, I don't think they get a true superstar either, but like if they could get, say, a Trae Young to pair with Wemby, and they should be a draw with Wemby, that's going to make them more competitive in a hurry. The only teams that are clearly worse than you and going to stay worse, barring major injuries or something crazy, are Utah and Portland. And then those teams in front of you, I don't see who's clearly going to take a step back. I mean, I don't know. Maybe LeBron finally regresses or retires. We'll see what happens with the Clippers and Paul George. There's been some speculation that he leaves and they've got some older guys. Maybe KD tries to leave the Suns if that mix, you know, goes out early and there's been some, you know, just little hints here and there that he's not happy. Maybe something like that happens. But I just don't see who the Rockets are easily going to pass. And that's saying that they won't. Just that it's going to be hard because all these other teams are locked in too. And so sort of the low-hanging fruit for the Rockets was getting from where they were last year to competitive. Now, in terms of taking the next step to get from, you know, 42-40 or 40-42, whatever the final record is this year, to eventually high 40s, then the 50s and trying to contend, it's going to be harder because all the other teams that you're trying to pass, well, they have stable cores in place and they are trying to win as well. Now, hopefully Houston's core is better. I do like the upside of a lot of these guys, but I'm just saying that by the same token that I don't think any big name stars are going to hit the market this offseason, at least not big name in the sense of like a top 10 difference maker that all of a sudden transforms a team's outlook. By that same token, you also have to be aware that these teams that are ahead of you right now in the standings aren't really going anywhere. So I would say that stability is probably the likely outcome for the Rockets. But by that same token, don't assume that you're automatically going to climb up the West standings just by staying the course. Because again, it's a stable landscape. And it's a stable landscape of really good teams.
Yeah. And a name that might go somewhere is, for instance, Karl-Anthony Towns, but I don't want to get
same,
into that.
Same thing.
You don't want that contract anyway. And, you know, just to give it, like we talked earlier about Dylan Brooks and upgrading that spot, just as an example, if they were actually interested, because I talked about this on Spaces and I brought it up, if they were interested, flipping him for Mikal Bridges and this draft pick and maybe some other capital that the Nets could use. But of course, they seem to think that Mikal Bridges is like an up and coming superstar or something like that. And he's worth, you know, a lot more than that. And they
15 first round picks.
Whatever. But that, to me, that's like the type of thing that we're talking about, like taking Dylan and that first round pick and maybe finding an upgrade in that role somehow, some way. That would be the idea, perhaps.
Maybe just doing it to get more shooting, because I think they brought in Dylan. Obviously, you make a move for Dylan Brooks and you sign him to a 4-year, $80-something million deal. You're thinking about the defense. Well, now you have Amen Thompson and Tari Eason that can give you a lot of that same defense. What you need from Dylan at the moment is actually shooting. The defense has been capable. What's really hurt them this week in particular, I mean, you're getting Jaylen drawing all this attention. You're getting these open looks, and Dylan is just not making nearly enough of them. So because you have these in-house options like Amen and Tari that can help you with your wing defense, then maybe now that Dylan spot, it makes sense to upgrade that into someone like a Mikal Bridges that brings you much more on the offensive side, specifically with shooting. I mean, on paper, Mikal is perfect. And, you know, I'm told the Rockets were and are interested in him. He's a good player. He's in a very good contract. It's just, you know, unfortunately, at least to this point, Brooklyn seems to be married to the idea of building around him. Maybe that changes if and when they don't get Donovan Mitchell this summer. I don't know. But yeah, that might be the spot that not just for the sake of moving on from Dylan, but just getting a slightly different type of player for that role. Because with the emergency of not just Tari, but Amen, then maybe the defense in that spot is not nearly as important as you thought it was when you signed Dylan to that deal a year ago.
Yeah, the other benefit of Mikal Bridges is his contract ends in 2 years, which benefits you based on some of the guys that you've got coming up, you know, some of the young guys. So that's a big helpful thing. It's at Ben Dubose. You guys know the story, Loggerline, USA Today's Rockets Wire. Anything else you want to plug before we take off?
No, that's basically it. RocketsWire.USAtoday.com for all the daily updates. And yeah, I do my Monday Locked on Rockets spot with Jackson Gatlin, which you can find at the Locked on Rockets YouTube.
Always a pleasure. M-I-Z, brother.
Z-O-U.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.